Where we talk trash about the things people love to hate, hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, we are back after a unplanned hiatus.
Yeah, what a week. Terrible sicknesses, work, all of it. All of it fell apart, but it's fine because we're back. So
we're
happy
back
to be here. And we're doing our Taylor Swift podcast on Thursday. So finding the balance for what to talk about when everyone's talking about Taylor Swift is the challenge of this pop culture roundup. But I think most importantly, hot off the presses, Taylor Swift announced that she's doing a docuseries on the Eras Tour coming out on Disney Plus December 12th. Are you excited?
Wait, when did this get announced? Was this today?
Oh, it was today. Breaking news for Matthew Huff. Yeah. So much for working in media. Oh, my God. She, through GMA, announced this 6-part docuseries plus a final version of the Eras Tour concert movie because she added the Tortured Poets Department. And so this follows the second leg of the tour. I'm not sure if it includes all of Europe or whatnot, but it seems to have a lot of behind the scenes of preparing for adding that Tortured Poets. Obviously, there's a lot more Sabrina and Gracie Abrams who joined her for that second half. And so, yeah, it's going to be a documentary look at the creation of the Eras Tour. And then on top of that has the full Eras Tour movie. So, yeah, I'm excited. I think it's interesting.
So it's going to be... So it's a docuseries.
Yeah.
And some of the episodes are just the concert, but then some of the episodes are...
No, I think the way they say it is docuseries plus. So I think it's 6 episodes about the creation and making of the Eras Tour. And then they have an updated movie of the concert.
Okay. So it's basically the same thing that we already saw, but just with this extra section added in.
Yeah, the movie part, but this
yes.
The docuseries will feature all the behind the scenes stuff and the making of. And
I am interested to see what this looks like. I mean, I think that her last documentary gave us a lot of interesting things to sort through when it comes to her as a person.
Yeah,
and I am intrigued to see what that looks like and what kinds of things she's gonna address in this, how much it will be sort of vulnerable versus how much it will just kind of be nuts and bolts. Also, 6 episodes is a lot of screen time for something, for a medium that I feel like we're not used to seeing in that length, you know what I mean?
Like the
Beyonce, Homecoming or the Renaissance movie or whatever, have behind the scenes stuff, but sort of
like
snippets.
Hour. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's saying the first 2 of the 6 episodes will go up for streaming and then 2 episodes each week following. So this is a 3-week event even. It's not even a dump.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, wow. Tuning in. Because I was trying to see if because I think it is 6 episodes and the movie.
It is interesting, I think, that she was in a sort of non-saturation mode for a while where she was much more removed. And now it feels she's a lot more, it's she's done all of these late night shows. She did the morning shows, she was on Graham Norton. She's doing, obviously they're slightly pre-planned, but more press than she has of late.
Oh yeah. And, well, I think one, because Joe Alwyn, her previous beau, was very anti-publicity. They were very quiet. She didn't want to talk about him. They didn't want to talk about each other. And now her partner is more than happy to be talked about and talk about. So I think it yeah, it follows where she is in her personal life, where she's just like, oh yeah, I'm way more open, feel more comfortable about where I'm at, whatever reason it is. And then on top of it, yeah, I think she realized through the first half of the Eras Tour, like, oh yeah, I'm untouchable. Like, even though people hate me and more people probably, you know, numbers wise hate her, there's still so many more people who are dialed in, who love her, who are eating everything up. So it's like, that has to be a nice suit of armor against like your usual insecurities or sort of like petulance or whatever it would be that has kept her, you know, hiding in suitcases or under umbrellas or whatever it is. Now she's like, oh yeah, whatever. I'm I'm literal queen of this industry right now. My numbers can't be touched. I can't be touched. Like, it's worth it to be out there and talked about rather than to be scared of what this like oversaturation could actually mean for her career. Cause it's like insane how it's truly wild how like her numbers for this album, which we'll get into more on Thursday, but it's like, okay, yeah, this isn't even just like, it's just inconceivable. Like, it's one of her more, you know, divisive albums, yet it's just outperforming everything she's done. And I think that just speaks to kind of where she is. So the idea of churning out a docuseries that's 6 episodes long to talk about a show that she's also releasing, that's a lot of content. And I am curious to kind of see what it'll be. I mean, the trailer looked great. It does seem like it's very much just obsessively following every detail of the tour and kind of how she winds down or who she's talking with or who she's hanging out with or how it works. And so I think it'll be interesting. And also compared to something like Miss Americana, which did follow parts of Reputation, it seems likely we'll get more insight, like more conversations with the dancers or the, you know, it won't just be Taylor at the mic, I think, which will be interesting.
So this will be, so this is more focused on the tour. It's yeah. not like, you know, like Lady Gaga's documentary or Jennifer Lopez's, where they're like, sure, there's a touring aspect, but they're talking right. about like lots of other pieces.
Yeah,
of
no, I think this is literally just called the Eras Tour, the so end like of an era. The 6-episode docuseries on the Eras Tour.
So, like, if she is going, you know, and like doing advocacy work in New York or whatever in between tour stops, like, we're not getting that. Like,
if she was doing that, I'm sure she'd love people to know. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it'll be interesting. Like, will this show her like during her breaks, like hanging out at her house, or will it just be like they're filming while she's on set type thing? I don't know. And will we get like the whole Vienna debacle? Doubt it. Is this gonna be glossy and shimmery while still like showing the life of a showgirl? Probably. But who knows? I'm curious. It's like everyone's doing a docuseries now, like Alex Cooper and Call Her Daddy. It's like everyone wants one. So will it be like talking about her life and how she got here? Or will it just be, let me show you how I did this 3-hour set? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by what this will look like. I also do think that there is a, you know, as with everything, there's sort of like a ceiling on how much people are interested in. I mean, and these docuseries, yeah, it's like at some point they're gonna fade a bit. Although I do kind of have the thought, like, maybe Taylor is making sort of like the opposite approach, where rather than try to like hold back and sustain growth for a long period, she's like, look, like, this is the height of my career.
This is the moment, yeah.
Like, I mean, is she this self-aware? I don't know. But, like, is she kind of like, this is the big moment. Great. We might as well, like, push as hard as we can and get as much money and stuff out of this. Yeah. Because at a certain point, the tour or the album or whatever is going to not perform as well. And sort of, like, once that happens, then it's sort of a downward spiral. And who knows? She could, that might not be happening.
No, then, yeah.
You know, for another 10 years or whatnot. But I do think that there comes a point in your career where there is kind of like a, I don't know, a change. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think Beyonce is Beyonce is a very different artist in a lot of ways. But it's like she had her big sort of like, you know, like her biggest like world cultural moment, I think, like back with, you know, I Am Sasha Fierce, where it's like Single Ladies and Halo and all of that kind of stuff. And then I think she's sort of like pivoted into this other direction where it's like, yeah, her albums and stuff are not like, she's not having number one singles on the radio, really. She's sort of focused on something else. Or then, like, I feel like the more negative version of this is, like, Katy Perry, where, like, okay,
yeah.
You have this moment where you have this, like, record-breaking album with 5 number one singles in a row, and then the next thing you know, it's like, oh, wait, everybody hates you. Like, I don't think Taylor Swift is quite headed in that direction, but, yeah, you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, you, can
you can't be number one forever.
No, yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting time, and I think also it's, I mean, this had to have finished recording. The last show of the tour was December 2023. So, I mean, I doubt we'll get footage after that, really, except maybe, like, you know, post in the moments. But it's not like you'll get, I mean, who knows? It is interesting to think of, well, what are they going to do for 6 episodes and why, like, drag it out? I don't know.
Right.
But I'm curious, and I do think these movies have done well for her. Like, any sort of concert video or documentary like Miss Americana, or, you know, she did her Fearless one. Like, these are exactly the type of things people eat up. And this has been on the fandom's mind since 2023, because they were aware that the concert was filmed. You know, all the cameras were out. They did the double night filming on stage, whatever. So it's like, this has been a rumor for so long that it'll be interesting to see what it is and why it took so long, you know, coming on 2 years, like what the holdup was.
I mean, if it's a docu-series and there's a lot of like, not,
yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of like behind the scenes footage and stuff, I think it's just a matter of like editing.
Yeah. Putting together a story. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like, if they were filming the entire final leg of the tour,
yeah,
you know, that's a lot of footage to work through. Yeah. And especially, I think sometimes it's easier if you're going for something shorter, because it's easier to cut stuff where, like, over 6 episodes, kind of like, okay, how do we do arcs of things?
Yeah.
How do we introduce people? How, yeah. Like, yeah. I am very intrigued by the backup dancers of it all, which I think we can again talk about on the Thursday's episode. But okay. Yeah. Interesting. So I know you're not on Twitter anymore.
Okay.
And I would like to say, like, in general, I mean, obviously, I hate Elon Musk, whatever. I feel like Twitter, up until maybe like a month ago's algorithm, like, gives me pretty much what I am interested in, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't find it like a super toxic place, because I think most of the people I follow are, you know, like liberal journalists or gay people or whatever. So it's like, it's not like I'm getting a lot of rogue, like, Republican material. Mm-hmm.
It's hard for them to find a window in there. A right. Door. Yeah.
Yes. But I will say, in the past month, I think it's swung a little too far, where I literally will get, like, not the same tweet, but the almost, like, exact same tweet about 10 times. Like, once I like something, my entire feed is just tweets about that.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent where, like, Kiss of a Spider Woman came out this weekend.
Okay.
I liked the movie. I liked a tweet about it. Almost my entire feed are tweets about Kiss of the Spider Woman. And I thought, wow, this is really having like a cultural moment. And then it's like, it made no money at the box office. I don't think anyone is really talking about this movie.
Yeah.
But every single tweet about this movie has been delivered to me. And so I haven't been going on Twitter as much, because I'm just like, wait, this is just giving me the same thing over and over again. Like, somebody needs to fix their algorithm. I say this because I don't know if this story that I'm about to bring up was a big story nationally or was only a big story to me.
To you, yeah. Personalized by Grok, yeah.
Right. Were you following the saga of the New York Film Festival secret screening? Do you know anything about this?
No.
Okay, okay. So then this was just me, but I'll enlighten the fans nonetheless.
Yeah,
okay,
thank you.
So New York Film Festival, you know, they have a, it's at Lincoln Center. It's every fall. It goes for like 3-ish weeks. And there's only 4 theaters that they program movies in. It's different than other film festivals in that like all of the movies are screened at the theaters at Lincoln Center. So there's not that many options. And the biggest theater is basically Juilliard's like auditorium that they turn into a movie theater for those couple of weeks. And it's called Alice Tully Hall. So when the schedule comes out, there was this gap in the schedule on this past this past Monday, where there wasn't anything in the like 9:00 p.m. slot. And most nights there's something there. So people were kind of like, what is this when the schedule comes out? Like, what's going to be in there? And some people, Taylor Swift fans, were like, oh, Taylor Swift is going to do something big because like this is time to like when her album's mm-hmm. dropping, whatever. That was like speculation early on. Then mm-hmm. like, I don't know, maybe 3 days before, they announced that there's a secret screening that's going to be that night. And they're not telling anybody what it is. And the rumor on the street on Twitter is that it's going to be the world premiere of Timothée Chalamet's movie Marty Supreme, where he plays a ping pong person, that is slated to come out at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there's no way that this movie's Marty Supreme. They didn't say that it was a premiere screening. It's just a secret movie. So it's just a movie that's not programmed for the New York Film Festival, but is going to be playing. Like, it could be anything. It could be Roof Man. It could be Hamnet. There's lots of movies that aren't playing this festival. It could be mm-hmm. anything. But Twitter is like certain for some reason that it's Marty Supreme. And I'm like, I'm not going to bother trying to get a ticket to this because I know it's going to be some random movie that I've either already seen at another festival or don't care that much about. It would be an insane strategy for them to premiere Marty Supreme on a Monday night at 9 p.m. at the last festival slot when the movie isn't coming out till Christmas. Like, that's just not a strategy that people use. Either they would have gone to a bunch of festivals or they skip the festivals. You don't just go to like the last week of the last festival and play one screening. Like, unless. I was like, what? So I had another screening. I had the screening directly before that in the mm-hmm. theater. So I was there. I watched the movie that I was watching, whatever. I see all these people waiting outside. I'm like, oh my gosh, like idiot losers. It's like all these film bros. And I was like, I can't wait for them to, you know, end up seeing like Kiss of the Spider Woman or something when they think that they're going to get this Marty Supreme ticket. Well, lo and behold, the secret screening is Marty Supreme. And I look like a complete idiot after telling everyone who would listen for those 3 days, like, oh, there's no way it's going to be Marty Supreme. Like, these people are so dumb. Like, you guys are psychotic if you think it's going to be Marty Supreme. And Timothée Chalamet was there. Gwyneth Paltrow was there. There was this giant after party that everybody was at.
Why are you telling this story?
And I was like, I could have been at this if I had deigned to ask for a ticket. But I was so sure that I knew that it wasn't going to be that I didn't put any effort into going to this screening or this party. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so stupid.
Yeah.
But one of the funny things about the screening, or that came about as because of the screening, is one, I guess in the Q&A, the director said that he only finished editing the film the night before the screening. So mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. why it was like a secret screening late, because they didn't know if he was going to finish it or not. So they didn't want to promote it. But two, Timothée Chalamet apparently had been practicing ping pong for like 10 years in preparation of this movie, and would bring ping pong tables with him as he traveled the world for various things. So like, he had a ping pong table on the Dune set mm-hmm. and like would practice in between takes. And I just love the idea of like Timothée Chalamet traveling the world with a ping pong table so that he can prepare for this ping pong movie. Like, absolutely ludicrous. And I would watch a 6-part docuseries on that, I will say.
Well, this is the craziest story to admit to on record for strangers on the internet. It's so funny. Next time, just ask me, and I could have reasoned you into understanding how
why it was a good idea that Marty Supreme played this festival.
Yeah.
I think it's just like such an, like, I've never seen this strategy used before. And usually award strategists are like pretty fuddy-duddy in their like rollouts. Because the strategy is, if you have a movie that's coming out late in the year, you wait for all of these fall festival movies to come out and get all their press and have all their interviews and whatever. And then once everybody's kind of bored with them, then you show up and go, hey, actually, we're this exciting new movie and we're the thing that people haven't seen and people haven't talked about. And so that's how you get a bunch of nominations for things.
But so now they have like the cool kid factor of, oh, you didn't see Marty Supreme. Oh my gosh, just wait. Oh wow. Yeah, I was there when Timothy Chalamet told the story about having a ping pong ball
The reviews coming out of it were like insane. Everybody's like, this is the best movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know if that's like real or that's just, you were at this secret screening of Marty Supreme and you're riding the hype. So I'll have to be the judge of that whenever I finally get around to see it. But
it's crazy. I'm sorry you missed out on that. That would have been great. That story could have been great. But I appreciate its greatness for another reason. And I value your vulnerability in sharing that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did want to touch on, so Keira Knightley doing press for a terrible movie no one wants to see, but she was
I did not hate it, I will say. I interviewed her. So spoiler alert, I got laid off last week. They cut the entire entertainment department at Parade. I know, it's sad, but also I low-key hated it, so it's fine. But I interviewed her for that and then did not write up the interview by the time I got laid off, so unclear where that footage and that another missed opportunity. But I did watch that movie. I found it entertaining. I'd never read the book, but I was like, oh, for a little like 90-minute like thriller.
Is The Woman in Cabin 10.
Yes, The Woman in Cabin 10. Yes.
Yeah, it's a Netflix yacht movie.
Okay, but anyways, what is she doing?
The other story is that she was announced as part of this Audible re-recording of the Harry Potter series. They're doing the audiobooks all over again, and she was cast as Professor Umbridge. So this is like a dramatic reading where there's like 100 people recording all the various parts. And so she was asked, like, oh, didn't you know there was sort of a fan boycott against Harry Potter? And she was like, no, I wasn't aware of that. And then just kind of made some sort of like half-assed, you know, we just have to learn to live together, don't we? We've all got to have different opinions and we have to find respect. And it's like, yeah, whatever. I think anyone touching Harry Potter is going to step in it at this point. But it did remind me of the story we missed out on last week about Emma Watson going on her like non-press tour.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And she like did this whole babbling sort of like, I have love for J.K. Rowling and we all need love for each other. And I hope anyone who disagrees with me still meets me with love, blah, blah, blah. Like basically, you know, not condoning J.K. Rowling's political beliefs, but being like, how can you expect me not to love her still? Mm-hmm. Which I was like, okay, whatever, I roll. But what was truly fascinating was J.K. Rowling's response to this, where she like went off the rails and was like, this bitch. It was just like such a perfect encapsulation of like how liberalism is like destroying ourselves. Because, you know, you have this idea of like, you want to reach out, you want to be supportive, you want to hear people out, you want to love and lead with love. But then the opposite side is like, no, bitch, you're dead to me. I fucking hate you. I don't agree with anything you believe in. And you're a loser and an idiot and you don't know what you're talking about. And also, F you for trying to play nice with me. And it's just like this sort of like paradox of tolerance, where if we like tolerate the intolerable, they're never going to like return the favor. It's never going to be like, oh yeah, and to you too. And so, yeah, it's kind of interesting watching these people who, for whatever reason that they can justify, like, sign up to these sort of ill-fated projects, such as, I don't know, a Saudi Arabian comedy festival or a Harry Potter project, and then watching them either justify it or sort of pretend, play dumb about it or whatever it is, and trying to figure out the right solution. Because I think if we instantly cancel, you know, whatever, if we instantly turn our attention on blaming the, you know, liberal or the person we tend to agree with, without bringing the same energy to the actual, like, intolerable people, then it's sort of like, I don't know. It's such an interesting, like, world we've created with this immediacy of, like, finger pointing and finger wagging of, if you don't do it right, then you're dead to me, and all you do is toxic, and I'll never talk to you again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know the right answer. I don't know what people should do, but I do find it funny as these people are kind of, like, asked about, oh, like, do you agree with J.K. Rowling being a total transphobic, evil, Nazi hated empathizer? And it's like, instead of just saying, like, no, I hate her and that's awful, I hope this project is different, there's this sort of, like, tiptoeing to protect the feelings of the people who don't feel anything for you. And I just think I would like the energy to be returned. I hope Emma Watson, like, learned her lesson and doesn't have to play so nice and sort of, like, word salad-y kind of, like, love is love, let's all come together. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so, like, I do appreciate Keira Knightley being like, no. I don't know if I believe it totally. I don't know how offline she is famously, but that's just like, come on, girl. Of course you knew it was controversial. But yeah, watching people stumble around how to, like, talk about these issues when they're still, like, you know, they're still signing up to do it. They'll still make money. These projects are still going to happen. Like, it is sort of like a curious, curious moment for a lot of these sort of pop culture and politics interceptions.
Yeah, it's hard with, like, politics. I mean, I feel like this is something that, I don't know, you get used to a certain extent, like, growing up in the church, of, like, okay, you have to take the high road, like, you can't take the low road, you have to, like, turn the other cheek, you have to be nice to the person. So you do kind of have to, and I think that is in some ways what makes the more liberal people, like, the good guys to a certain degree. Like, that they are sort of willing to, I don't know, like, be too sort of kind to a fault to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be a part of a group that's just, like, always leading with, like, hate. But at the same time, when somebody is, you know, reveals themselves to be a terrible person, I think you have to be able to call that out at the same time and be like, okay, you know, J.K. Rowling is doing some really disgusting, hateful, horrible things, and I do not stand with that, and I do not stand by her. If at any point she wants to have a conversation about this with me, like, in good faith, or she wants to change her mind or whatever, like, I'm not going to hold this sort of grudge against her. But I do think that, I mean, you know, it depends on what the redemption arc looks like. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I guess if she,
you know,
contributes her billions to.
Well, if she's like, if she, like, comes out at some point in 10 years and is like, look, I feel terrible about this. Like, I, you know, got stuck in this wormhole or whatever and was so fixated on this. And now looking back, I realize that this was terrible and I'm, you know, making restitutions. And yeah, I'm like, I've donated all this money to trans causes and whatever. Like, then I think far be it from me to be like, we don't want your money, like, stay away, you know? But yes, at the same time, I think if you're Emma Watson, like, it's the metaphor about, like, sawing the baby in half. Like, if you end up trying to divide it between two people, then you're going to end up, like, satisfying nobody. And I think that's the JK or the Emma Watson sort of.
Is that the sawing the baby in half metaphor? I thought that was that you'll see who truly cares because they won't sacrifice the baby.
Well, yes, they're like, that's the part of the story, but there's the phrase, there's a phrase about it that's like, yeah, basically, like,
if you saw a baby nap, no one's happy.
Well, if you're trying to make everybody happy, you're not going to make anybody happy, I think is the point of that story to a certain degree of like, yeah, if you're going to be fair about this and you're not going to take sides, then you're going to end up with neither of you actually having a baby rather than one of you.
Dead baby.
Yeah, you're both going to have a dead baby. Yeah.
Honestly, I think we should have a spinoff talking about Bible stories. I mean, our future.
I would be great. I don't know any of the Mormon Bible stories, so that we would have to figure out. Right, but you have extra things.
No, but we could talk about our readings of the Bible.
Don't pretend like you guys are the same. Like you have
no, a, but I was talking about literal Bible stories. I know you don't know Book of Mormon stories, but. But I'd be curious to know the evangelical versus the Mormon reading of the Bible based on this.
I'm well versed in, I will say.
Yeah, no, that'll be a good 500th episode. We'll just switch to to Bible stories. The Bible Hour with P.S. Yerong.
Yeah.
Coming at Sunday school Wednesdays. So that Audible series is happening. I don't know why. I honestly don't like dramatic readings of books. I prefer one narrator. Mm-hmm. I have never enjoyed like a full ensemble in an audiobook. It just unnerves me. I don't know. So I won't be listening anyways. But the other story I wanted to touch on because it's near and dear to my heart is Diane Keaton passed away. Yes. And I just wanted to take this moment to like celebrate and treasure her impact in my life. So Matt, I don't know your appreciation of Diane Keaton or how deep it goes, but I did want to put you on the spot and ask for a favorite movie or two or what your vibe is.
Yes, I would say that I like Diane Keaton a good amount. I loved Father of the Bride and Father of the Bride Part 2. Like iconic. Those were staples growing up. I think it's always fun to remember that she's in the Godfather movies, which I forget. We and then it's it. Like, yeah. Oh, wait, yeah, of course, Diane Keaton, like, in the Godfather movies. I watched the first Wives Club during the pandemic, which I liked. I famously spent most of my life thinking that that was a movie about president's wives watched it and realized, oh, wait, no, it's about, ex-wives of men. Yeah,
first wives.
I'm trying to think of what else Diane Keaton is in that I have really liked.
I feel like you were a fan of Look Who's Talking. No?
Look Who's Talking?
The baby narrated movie.
I don't think I saw that. Sorry to this man. I don't know what that is. I never saw the book club movies. Like now I'm looking through the list of things you've seen. I mean, the Family Stone is a bad movie, but I do sort of like her in it. Yeah. I know that some people love that movie. Father of the Bride, The Godfather. I've never seen like Annie Hall or her Woody Allen movies.
Yeah.
Which I feel no real inclination to see.
Yeah, I'm sure she was great in it. Congrats to her. The impact for me didn't start until, probably Father of the Bride.
She was in a Justin Bieber music video?
I don't know.
Apparently in 2021, she was in the music video for Ghost.
Justin Bieber. Dope.
Okay, well, good for her.
Well, anyways, lost the legend. Just wanted to highlight that. R.I.P.
R.I.P. I feel like it was sort of unexpected that she passed away. So yes, she's like older, so it wasn't like shocking, but it did take me off guard. Yeah, it wasn't Dick Van Dyke passed away or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know do we know how she died yet or hasn't that
been I don't think now? So. I mean, okay. Yeah, I don't know if she had some sort of illness, we weren't aware of it as the general public.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, so that's it. That's the week. Do you want to do Love It or Hate It?
Yes, I do. And my Love It or Hate It is
Marty Supreme.
Well, no. Marty Supreme, which I did see. I was at the midnight screening. If anybody asks, I was there. I loved it. I love the section where, you know, there's the ping pong balls are there and he's there and, you know, it's sort of the music's going and yes. Oh my gosh. So good. No, I wanted to talk about Saturday Night Live, which is back for season 51.
Yeah.
And I felt like last season was very strong. So I'm more sort of in the ecosystem now than I was previously. I'm not watching the full episodes, but I like watch clips and stuff. And this past week was Amy Poehler's episode, I guess, because she's hosting, because her podcast is so successful. Her podcast is definitely winning the Golden Globe for the podcast award that they added. That's
well, 1,000% happening. But she's also a SNL legend. Does she need a reason to come back and host?
I think yes. I think that they get people tied to projects. Like, I don't think that they just have random people hosting at random times, really. Like, I think you've got to have something.
Yeah, I don't know enough of SNL data to really stand my ground. But yeah, she does have a good podcast. But she's also, like, SNL royalty.
Right, yes. Which is why the episode was so good, I think. Mm. Like, because she was back. She had Tina Fey, Seth Meyers. Like, she had some of her old famous stints, but then she also you know, is like so good that she can make the new stuff great. Mm-hmm. There was a skit that I really loved that was like it was making fun of the idea of how like law firm, like personal injury law firms, say that they have all of this experience, and so it was like law firms like continually like one-upping each other on like how much experience they had by like the lawyers getting older and older. And I just thought it was very like entertaining to watch these like warring law firms. But what I wanted to talk about gearing up for Thursday's episode was the Charlie XCX of it all. Did you see anything about this?
Yeah, I called it a reach and then just ignored it. I'm really sick of the discourse. I really am. But it did not seem like shade at all to me.
You don't think so?
There were too many variables. It was literally the shirt the singer was wearing in the promos. And it's like, Kansas City is like a dig at Taylor? How?
I just thought it was so role model is the musical guest. And yeah, he sings this song where Sally, where did you go? I love the song, but I can't remember the title is, but it's Sally something, something, something.
Yeah.
And basically there's a part in the song when he's performing it where he has Sally come out.
You know,
tonight's Sally, quote unquote. And sometimes it's random people, but it's been famous people as of late. It's basically like a switch up of Charlie XCX's like Apple video of how like she picks someone from the crowd to do the Apple dance every concert. Yeah. Basically he's doing the same thing, which is a very good PR move, I think, if you're a musician and you have famous friends.
Well, like, yeah, it's like them. Serena Carpenter is like arresting you for being too hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Or like when Madonna had the people come on the stage to judge.
Oh yeah. Or things. Bieber's the only girl in the world.
But I think they've switched. I think we've gotten more into a celebrity version. I think they'll take a random person if there's nobody else available. But if there's anyone remotely famous, they'll get that person. So he's performing on the show. The Sally comes out. It's Charlie XCX. And she's wearing this shirt that's for like a bar in Kansas City, which he had been wearing in the promo. But I still think it's funny that she...
It's like the lamest dig, though. And I think Charlie XCX is better than that. I think she could have had a better dig than that.
Well, the thing is, I don't think it's like really a dig so much as like a wink of like, yes, I've seen the discourse. Like, I will not be engaging in this, but let me know. But I will let you know that something is happening. You know, like...
Yeah.
She's not like coming out wearing a shirt that's like, Taylor Swift's a bitch.
Should have a tiny chihuahua and a little purse. I think that'd be a better wink. I think, or like, or changing it to Kitty or something. You know, like, it's like, it's such a stretch because it's not even like, I had to study the article to figure out what the dig was, because it's just that the shirt says Kansas City.
I don't think it's really a dig so
much. That the reference, like, shade could be, and it's just that it's the shirt says Kansas City and Taylor Swift's boyfriend plays for Kansas City. So it's like, okay.
I mean, I think 1,000% how this happened, if I'm if I'm speculating, is she's friends with Role Model. She shows up because she's doing this thing, which she knows that she's doing. At some point in the process of her getting ready or whatever, they stumble upon the fact that there's this shirt that says Kansas City. And either she or someone on her team or whatever is like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if she's wearing the Kansas City shirt because of the Taylor Swift stuff? And so she does. Like, I don't think that this was like a long thought out kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it was more of like a wouldn't this sort of be like funny if I wore this? Okay, I'm gonna do it.
Maybe. It just was so like, okay. It just seems silly that it got 27 news articles out of it. And I'm not even being like, Taylor's the winner, Charlie's the winner, like, whatever. The beef itself is interesting, but this didn't add to it for me personally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I don't think that this was like really meant to say anything.
Yeah,
like other than just kind of like a funny wink at like, yeah, I know
Kansas
this is
City
going on. Like, I've seen there's things. But okay, yes. What's your love it or hate it?
Oh yeah, shoot. You know what? You know what? I watched Naked Gun, now streaming on Paramount.
Oh.
And it was funny. It's not necessarily like my cup of tea, but he's so like charismatic in such a specific way. And I think it worked well in this like idiotic, campy sort of humor. And it did make me laugh. I was embarrassed at the moments I chuckled, but I did. It was well made. It was quick. It was funny. And they really leaned into the outrageousness of it, like cold cases coming from a fridge type of thing. So I appreciated that. I thought that was fun. I think everyone involved had fun, and I liked witnessing that. So an easy streaming win. So
yeah, it was very goofy, but
yeah,
good time. Okay, well, let us wrap this up, and we'll be back on Thursday to discuss The Life of a Showgirl by Taylor Swift, track by track.
I can't wait. Okay.
But okay, see you guys then. Bye.